Hello, and welcome to the fourth episode of season two of the Ether podcast, a podcast associated with Ether, a journal of strategic air power and space power. I'm Laura Thurston Goodrow, and today we'll be visiting with Air University faculty member Dr. Bradley Podliska and Air Command and Staff College student Major Maria Patterson about their recent War on the Rocks article, Aim High, Fixing the Air Force Commander Selection Process. Dr. Podliska is an assistant professor of national security studies at Air University. He has a PhD in political science from Texas A&M University and is the author of several publications, including Fire Alarm, the investigation of the U.S. House Select Committee on Benghazi, published in 2023 by Lexington Books. Major Maria Patterson is an Air Force officer and member of the Air Force Office of Special Investigations. Special Agent Patterson's three command tours include leading a pivotal counterintelligence unit in Iraq and managing extensive criminal forensic support across the Western United States and Central and South America. She is pursuing a master's degree in military science from Air Command and Staff College. Bradley and Maria, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having us.
So to set the stage for our listeners, first, tell us about the problems inherent in the way Air Force Command selection boards are structured and executed, how you talk about it in your article, you introduce it. In short, why are toxic leaders still getting through?
Well, thank you, Laura. So instead of regurgitating the regulations, I wanted to give an example of our command selection board and how it allows toxic leaders to get through. So, all right, get this. You're an Air Force officer. You're an O4, so that means you've been serving your country anywhere from 9 to 14 years. You're up for promotion and command, and you've checked all the boxes. You completed your master's, you have several deployments, a short tour, key positions. They all take time away from family and friends. You miss memorable moments, and you give the Air Force your all. All your documents are compiled, and they're sent to the Air Force Personnel Center for board evaluation. The O6 board members are individuals you may or may not know. They may or may not be in your career field, and they don't necessarily have the same background, experiences, or value the same type of assignments you do. They're instructed on the nuances of your career field and told to grade all packages to select the best and fully qualified officers. Remember, they're provided 9 to 14 years of data, all your performance reports, all your stratifications, your decorations, training reports, education, information related to every assignment you've ever had, short and long tour information, adverse action documentation, along with a summary of all your key accomplishments and much more. Here's the kicker. The board members have to evaluate hundreds of packages and only have about 60 to 90 seconds to evaluate each individual. There's no possible way anyone has the capacity to internalize all the information, consider all the data points, to make the best decision. They have to rely on heuristics, mental shortcuts, to be able to get through their stack of officer evaluations. You have a room full of O6s combing through mounds of data, trying to decipher between great, excellent, and outstanding officers based on quick glances at stratifications and personal opinion on data that may or may not be present in the package. With the overwhelming amount of information, quick and ill-informed decisions at no fault of the board members must be made on who to select to continue on. And unfortunately, that's how those leaders who look good on paper but have no business leading get by. For example, although a person may do amazing in a high visibility staff position, they may fail miserably in their operational command tour. If the individual doesn't perform well, but also doesn't do anything that's illegal, immoral, or unethical, they will likely be silently removed from their operational position and put back into a staff position for rehabilitation. And what do you know? They do great while at the staff role again, and they're up for promotion and command, and the cycle continues. Toxic leadership in the Air Force is such a large topic with many different avenues in need of exploration, but the command selection process and its inherent biases is one of the avenues that can be adjusted to mitigate the number of toxic leaders getting through to leadership positions and affecting greater numbers of our airmen.
It's remarkable, and I like the way you laid out the timelines. I know folks who have been on these boards over the course of their careers, and I was shocked when I first heard about the tight timelines they have to do and how many they have to go through. It's really mind-boggling. And you're right, and the point about going back to staff officer positions, vice command, and how leadership, it's always occurred to me, even in civilian positions, how leaders are evaluated by people who are above them, not people who they've led, which is a little bit to me like backwards. So anyway, so thank you for the background explanation on that. So now the article then goes to discuss the fact that kind of the lack of doctrine. So Air Force has included leadership as a doctrinal subject from its founding in 1947 through 2004 or 2015. I was unclear in the article, but can you talk to the role of doctrine and why we need to have robust doctrine in place to ensure that toxic leaders don't get through and the right people get selected for those really key pivotal jobs?
Sure. I think that that actually is correct, that from 1948, so soon thereafter the Air Force's founding up until 2015, the Air Force actually had doctrine on leadership. It's probably best to take a step back and talk about what actually is doctrine. And that is doctrine's an agreed upon set of practices and principles. It's going to be changed and adapted as lessons are learned over time. It sits between policy and concepts. So with policy, compliance is mandatory, but unlike a concept, it's actually been tested and proven. Now, the Air Force was established in 1947. Soon thereafter, 1948, it's going to release Air Force Manual Volume 35, Issue 15, titled Air Force Leadership. In this doctrine, it's going to tell everyone exactly what it means by leadership, and it's going to define it. Leadership is the art of influencing people to progress with cooperation and enthusiasm towards the accomplishment of a mission. And the Air Force is actually going to continue to provide doctrine and guidance. That is up until August 8, 2015, when the LeMay Center is going to release Volume 2, Leadership. So now, why is all this important? Why do we actually need doctrine? Well, as I stated, doctrine is agreed upon practices and principles. It's a tested hypothesis. So for leadership, in short, it means that the Air Force has assessed lessons learned and concluded what it's actually looking for in its leaders. Now, with that said, doctrine is going to be adaptable and it has to change as new information is acquired. So having a command selection board follow doctrine is going to allow for a deductive approach in which board members are using this Air Force theory of leadership from doctrine. They're applying a model that is derived from doctrine, and they're selecting officers impartially based on best practices and principles. With time, as more and more tests are conducted through the command selection board, doctrine is going to be updated and adapted as necessary. For example, and this is a complete and total hypothetical, if leadership doctrine states that physical fitness is correlated positively with exemplary commanders, the board would use physical fitness as one criterion in selecting its commanders. However, over time, we may learn that there is no correlation or maybe even a negative correlation between physical fitness and commander performance. So we would then go back and update doctrine as necessary. The bottom line being, doctrine both guides the commander selection board, and then the board results are going to be used to update the doctrine. To give an example of this, the Army has actually currently taken this approach for its command assessment program. Its officials use quantified variables from the Army Leadership Requirements Model, which is found in its Army Doctrine Publication 6-22. And these commander candidates are actually told in advance in their prep guide, you're being assessed basically directly from doctrine itself. The quote is, "The secret to success, the CAP, is lead in accordance with the Army's leadership doctrine throughout your career." We're hopeful the Air Force is going to follow suit. AETC is currently drafting Air Force Doctrine Publication 1-2, and this would be the perfect time for guidance and evaluation method to be given to the Command Selection Board to use.
That's interesting. I'm really glad you brought the Army discussion, and you mentioned the Navy programs as well. I have a little bit more familiarity with the Army piece of it. They were writing about it back when I was working for the Army, and it looked like it was a good thing overall to get a better group because they had done an extensive study interviewing people who left as captains and asking them about their commanders when they were first and second lieutenants. And the role of those commanders made the impact of those commanders decided whether they stayed in the Army or whether they left. Hopefully the Air Force is watching and learning. I know that the, we had that recent issue dedicated to toxic leadership for ASOR, and the Army there, as you know, their toxic leadership, they actually have a whole definition of toxic leadership that's fairly robust and updated. So now that we know the problem, and in addition to the doctrine, you talk about some solutions to this that the Air Force, some recommendations and solutions. And also as part of that, since artificial intelligence is among us and thriving and growing, what role AI kind of would play in such a process?
So I'll take the first half of this. So what should the commander selection process look like? So for officer development, selection, and assessment processes, they must be revamped if the Air Force is serious about promoting the best candidates for the command positions. We need a process for collecting and analyzing all known, relevant, and consistent data points to be able to make the best decision with the maximum results. The Air Force needs to develop clear guidelines for what it looks for in commanders and make them well known across the service to improve the process. The Air Force needs to develop commander assessment programs similar to those of the Air Force with their soft forces, the Army with their battalion and colonel leaders, and the Navy with their commanders before officers are matched with critical command positions. Real-life leader-dependent criteria should be identified and assessed for each individual. For example, the Air Force should identify criteria such as the ability to understand and execute appropriate risk tolerance. Is the leader adaptable? Can they make decisions in crisis? All while incorporating that data with Air Force specific commander assessment program results, which could include cognitive and non-cognitive testing, written and verbal assessments, psychological interviews, etc. When all critical factors are available for analysis, the most deserving individuals will be identified for command consideration. This type of data collection and analysis will help avoid discrimination in command selection, ensure promotion equity for underrepresented demographics, and provide high-performing individuals with the opportunities that they deserve. Including the factors I just described in commander determination would require an overhaul in the current evaluation process, but it would make for a fairer and faster process in the long run.
Yeah, and just to follow up here, so the criteria and factors that Maria talked about, those would be encapsulated in a model. And then AI could be used in what academics call an expected utility calculation, which data would be quickly processed, and a final score would be offered for those board members. The Army, as you talked about, Laura, has actually currently taken this approach, and it found that its AI algorithm was actually 96% in line with what humans would have decided in its command selection process. This AI calculation alone would save what we calculated the board members over 40 hours of evaluation time, and it's going to allow those board members to focus more on nuanced detail that might have been overlooked in the past. For example, a candidate might receive a high overall score, but they might receive a low score in a category such as discipline. Board members could then use AI to analyze the history of commanders with similar low discipline scores and see how it actually impacted their command performance. Or those board members could use AI to determine what jobs the candidate might with a low discipline score might be best suited for or, you know, not best suited for. In the end, these scores, as I talked about earlier, over time, they're going to be used to go back and update the doctrine and update the model.
That's great. It brings to my mind the whole idea of data. You know, the key is like, how do we manage? So you need this data. So that's kind of one other step in this process. How do you, there's so much in terms of data analytics that efforts like this require, to a good end, but you have to get those requests in and raise that level of importance in terms of funding and efforts such as data analytics.
Yeah, the way that I see it is having AI be able to do the things that computers can do and leave all of the other things that only humans and commanders and people that are able to use that critical thinking, have them focus on that exclusively and just get rid of the churn that's not necessary.
Yeah. Well, there's so many ways they can, if nothing else, the military keeps records better than probably any other organization in the United States. So, you know, there's a lot of data they can go back and test. I think the possibilities seem endless. So on that, I always ask all of our guests, if you could be ruler for the day, or if there's any final closing thoughts, please elaborate, share them with us.
Yeah, I guess the bottom line is here that Ray and I are hopeful that the Air Force is going to take the lessons learned from our article and first update that doctrine, develop that model, and then provide these results to the Command Selection Board to use.
Right.
I see some changes in progress now. I know that the A1 is working on something similar to what the Army CAP program is. It's supposed to go live this fall. But as an Air Force officer myself, I had never even heard of it. So I don't know what the execution is going to look like, how far they have developed it, and what type of input they have received from actual real life officers out in the field right now, as opposed to people at the Pentagon that, you know, may or may not have the relevant experience. So although I do see some changes coming in over the horizon, I do believe that it will likely take a little bit of an effort to make sure that it's the right type of change and not just change for the sake of change. I do think that there is a good outcome that can come of this, but it's probably going to involve a lot of people that are currently in the mix of things as opposed to were in the mix of it like 10 years ago. But I am hopeful.
Well, I am too. And it'll make a better force. So, well, I want to thank you both so much for joining me on the podcast. This has been a fantastic conversation and I look forward to changes and I hope your article gets good play and good attention at the levels that it needs to. I'm sure it probably already is. Thank you both so much.
Thank you, Laura.